Welcome aboard. I'm Brad.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Scott. Welcome to My Ship Story Podcast.
This is a podcast where we invite crew members, both past and present, to tell their stories about life at sea.
So come up to the pool bar and grab a drink.
Sit back, relax, because it's time for
My Ship Story. God, that was terrible.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's another episode of My Ship Story Podcast. I'm Brad. Got with me Scott and Eric. And hey guys, I'm not going to check in with you. I've got a question for you. Do you know how to sail a boat?
Yeah, I got a remote control.
I did right here. I did 2 weeks in around the Greek islands on a sailboat.
All right. So did you kind of learn? Did you kind of pick it up a little bit? Were you guys
a little
sailing
bit? We were
yourself?
With Blaise Besant on that, and I learned a little bit, but it was quite an adventure because we had a keel tap the first day. And everything went askew after that. We almost had a fire on board. It was quite the ordeal.
Go figure.
Yeah.
So did you have, if I remember right, your captain was Blaise, right?
Yes. Blaise,
fire, Skretting. Hand in hand.
Okay. So Morten Skretting, he's
was
actually,
staff captain.
Yeah, he's actually a licensed captain.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and then
for a sailboat.
No. And we had water coming in through where the,
bilge.
Feel free to help him out, John.
No. Yeah, I need help here. I forgot what it's called, but where the propeller comes into the boat.
The stuffing box where the shaft penetrates the hull.
Yeah. So we started taking out water too.
That's a whole different podcast there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was quite the trip, but it was a lot of fun.
I got
Scott,
to sail.
You ever sailed?
I mean, I have been around like Lake Hefner on sailboats and stuff, but I did sail by myself. Is it called a Kiss Cat?
Yeah,
a small
like
one person sailboat. Like it's basically just got one. I mean, it's like one tiny sail. But I did go. Probably the most exciting one that I went on was I think it was in St. Martin, the America's Cup. We went on. Was it called America?
I don't remember the name of the sailboat, but it was it was America's Cup, and they had two boats in St. Martin, and you raced against one another, which was really cool.
That was like one of the actual boats that a long time ago that they raced. I was like winchman number two, and what's my sailing term? I try to use to sound really cool. Oh my, this is yar. Your boat is yar.
Yar?
Isn't that a real term? Yar? Yar, like
John, feel free to jump in here, even though we haven't introduced you yet.
Is it like your boat is yar, like it's in good condition, like it's nice or something?
Not a term I'm familiar with, but
let me drink some more.
It's kind of like his Filipino,
but it was a lot of work. It was like a lot of work. I remember we were all exhausted by the time, and we only did a really short little race. It was maybe like 30 minutes or an hour or something.
It was like 30 minutes. It was that same boat. Like I had to wrench this whole thing. And I was like, oh my God, I couldn't. It was easier being drunk for 2 days than it was after the pain of your arms and shoulders and lats and everything. Like you're at the time, you're like, yeah, this is great. This is great. I had 3 days later, I'm backstage trying to pull curtains and stuff. And I'm like, oh. It was horrible, but it was the funnest thing.
Yeah.
Well, my sailing experience was on Canton Lake. My cousin Neil Chain bought a sailboat.
You have a cousin named Neil Chain?
Neil Chain.
I thought you said Chain.
Chain.
It was your Oklahoma twang, and I was like, this is like an episode of Seinfeld.
Now we have Brad, Thad, and Chad, and Neil Chain.
Yeah, Neil Chain, my cousin. He's a little bit older than me, but he bought this sailboat. And I guess since he knew that I worked on cruise ships, he'd called me and we would go out and try and sail this sailboat. And he had taken some lessons, so he kind of knew how to sail. And he was kind of trying to teach me too. And it was super fun. Of course, it was a really tiny boat and it just had the one sail and everything. And really just the only thing I really learned was that, man, you had to watch your head whenever you tacked from one side to another, that the
back and round
boom. Is it the boom, John?
The boom.
Does it hit you in the head when you tack from one side to your from tacked across the lake? But anyway, it was super fun. Welcome to the show, John Inslee. Thanks for being with us, John. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited for our conversation.
Yeah. And so, guys, we're going to veer off the rails a little bit because this is not our typical guest. We don't have somebody that was a previous crew member that is, you know, going to tell us all kinds of stuff about cruise ships. John teaches people how to sail sailboats. That's pretty much it, right, John?
That's the very simple description. Yes.
Yes.
But that is very accurate. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started. Tell us a little bit how you got started sailing, and then we'll get into how you got started with the website and the whole sailing course. And just it's called Cruise to Learn, yeah. By the way.
So just real quick,
Cruise and Learn.
People that obviously are listening and can't see it. John is on a sailboat coming to us from the Sea of Cortez. Just right by Mexico. So that's a first for us too.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate you bringing that in. I forgot to mention that. That's awesome.
That's what I'm here for.
Valuable.
And there's Eric's input to the rest of the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. So John, how did you get into sailing?
Well, so I learned in summer camp when I was 11 years old, sailing little boats on a lake called Big Lake in, Central Oregon. I grew up in Southern Oregon. And so you guys kind of mentioned sailing on lakes. So that's how I learned as a kid in summer camp and really sailed small boats on lakes and that kind of thing. But my dad was really fascinated with more ocean sailing type boats. He never had a boat, oddly enough, but he had the magazines and the videos and all the stuff around the house. So I sort of was exposed to that growing up. And then flash forward a long time, right? So somewhere around 2004, I think, a friend of mine invited me to the Portland Boat Show and went to the boat show and was kicking around. And there was a booth there and they were offering sailing lessons. So I signed up for sailing lessons in Portland, Oregon, and did a lesson on the Columbia River in, I think it was February, which was pretty much miserable. But I had a blast, right? I absolutely loved the sailing part despite the wet and cold. So I decided, well, I kind of like this sailing thing. I think I'm really going to jump into this. So, the class I took was an American Sailing. Back then it was American Sailing Association. They've now shortened it to American Sailing. And that was their basic keelboat, their intro course. So I did some research and I found a American Sailing school in Belize that was offering the next level of courses. So I went down to Belize and I spent about 10 days and got some additional certifications and some additional training. So that's really how once I got back from Belize, I was hooked. And at that point it was just getting out on the water as often as I could, any way I could. And that kind of started this journey for me almost 20 years ago now.
And what size were those boats when you first started learning?
So that initial class on the Columbia River was on I believe it was a 22 or a 24 foot, just a small keel boat. And then down in Belize, we did some training on a 30 foot cruising boat, a little bit bigger, and then a 35 foot catamaran, because I picked up a catamaran certification while I was there as well.
Well, is there much difference between sailing, you know, a single hull ship and a catamaran?
Yeah, one's got two holes.
The actual sailing of them is pretty similar. There are some differences between the catamarans and the monohulls, but the basic
monohulls. I'm picking up some jargon already.
Yeah, some lingo. So the basic skills in terms of all the maneuvers that you do with the boat are essentially the same. Just some minor differences between the catamaran with two holes and a monohull with a single hole and a keel.
All right. So were you doing something else while you were still, you know, had this passion for sailing, or did you kind of go whole hog into sailing?
No, that is actually probably the most interesting part of the story from that period of my life. So I was working in corporate America, a sales job in industrial sales, and was selling things. So I kind of developed this whole desire to take off on a boat. And a friend of mine, handed me a book called The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferriss. That book sort of got me thinking and going down the right road. So, it, of course, technology was kind of coming online now too in the mid-2000s and making some things possible. So I went to my boss, who is also a good friend of mine. I said, hey, I'm going to take all 4 weeks of my vacation at once. And he's like, well, I don't think you can do that. So, well, I'm going to do it. And and I said, oh, and I'm not going to tell anybody I'm on vacation. And I'm going to go to Mexico and take my vacation. And so he freaked out, but I went. And so I had met a friend who had a boat here in Mexico. And I jumped on the boat for a month. And I bought a little 3G dongle for my laptop. I had Mexico added to my, you know, my Verizon plan. And as we sailed down the Pacific coast of Mexico for a month, I was able, none of my customers, none of my coworkers, nobody I worked with had any idea I wasn't sitting in my office in cold, drizzly Portland. And so the turning point really came, we got to Mazatlan in Mexico, and we were in this marina, and I had this very important call set up. I'm sitting on the deck of the sailboat, my back against the mast, laptop in my lap, Bluetooth, and a cold Pacifico on the deck next to me. And I'm conducting this call, and we basically wrap up this negotiation for this supply contract. And when I hung up that call, I was on the call for like an hour. When I hung up that call, I just like, it struck me like, I got to change my life, right? There is so much that's possible here with this technology and the ability to work remotely. Way before working remote was cool, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You figured out the work remote way before COVID.
Yeah, 3G dongle, right? That tells you how long ago this was. And so then I really, in earnest, started figuring out, all right, how am I going to go spend my time on boats and still make a living? So it took a few years to make the transition, but I really did two things. I got some licensing and started a financial planning practice that was 100% virtual in 2012. And then simultaneously, I also pursued, and by that time I'd been sailing for quite some time, and I pursued instructor certifications through American Sailing, who I had gotten my certifications from originally. And so the financial planning practice and teaching sailing gave me the ability to basically spend a lot of time on boats. And in places like Mexico, as well as I spend my summer months up in the Puget Sound and San Juan Islands in Washington State, and then my winter months down here in Baja.
So by 2012, had you bought your own boat?
So there's many facets to this whole story. So by 2012, yes, I had actually my first boat and sold in my second boat. By 2012.
Two happiest days of a man's life. The day he buys a boat, the day he sells it.
The day he sells it, yeah. I do not disagree with that statement.
So do you live all the time on the boat, or do you have a home on land as well?
I have a home on land at this point. I have lived aboard at various times, but no, not currently. So we have a house in Southwest Washington on the South Puget Sound, where we spend most of the summer months, and then I'm a permanent resident in Mexico at this point. So I have a place in Mexico as well, where I spend the winter months, and then mostly I'm spending time on. I have a 46-foot sailboat up in Washington that we use to teach on in the summers. And then I partner with a school down here in La Paz, so I'm on their boats through the summer.
Now, when you say that we have a house up in where it was, is your wife's name Brandy?
It's not Brandy.
Did you get that? Did anybody else get that?
No, we got it, Scott.
Okay.
We got it, Scott.
I was waiting for that. Just kidding, Amber. I'm not trying to point anything.
Brandy was kind of a loose girl, so be careful.
I mean, it's a great song. That's all I was going for. Now, okay, so when you say that you have, so how many boats do you have? Do you have a boat up north and then a boat south that you just change in between?
So I personally have one boat that's up in the Pacific Northwest. But then I work. So over the years, I've taught for a number of different schools. So basically, I spend a lot of time on various boats that these schools own or that they operate, or on charter boats. And then the most recent chapter of the story is I launched Cruise and Learn Sailing International. So this is my own school. I still teach for American Sailing Schools, but we now have our own school, Cruise and Learn Sailing International.
So how long have you been doing Cruise and Learn Sailing? Is this
Cruise and Learn Sailing is a brand? It's a startup.
Yep. Oh, okay.
It's brand just launching here in 2024. I've been instructing for over 10 years now through American Sailing. So we're just kind of taking this to the next level. And
so it's cruiseandlearnsailing.com, and it's really informative. I was checking it out. I've been checking it out for ever since we've been talking, and seems really, really great. Lots of options and very affordable, really. I thought it would be a lot more than it is.
Well, and depending how you do it, it can be through other places. So I mentioned we're kind of offering some unique programs. So what we're really trying to do, the teaching all these years, one of the things I've noticed is I've taught a lot of multi-day courses where you do essentially 3 to 4 sailing courses over a 1 week trip, like here in Mexico or up in the San Juan Islands. And which is, of course, it's a lot of fun and it's a great immersive experience. But at the end of that week, a lot of students will tell me that, you know, I don't see myself going and chartering a boat next week.
So if you're in different ports and stuff with probably cruise ships and everything, is it ever appealing to you to do kind of like a America's Cup, not a joy cruise where you go out and work and stuff, but like to take maybe advanced lessons for cruise passengers? And maybe you could set up with doing like a cruise partnership with one of the cruise lines for people to come in, maybe take a master's class with you, or maybe take a beginner's class while you're in port. I mean, is that something maybe?
You know, it could be something maybe more along the lines of a Discover Sailing, right? Come out for a 4-hour or a full day course. But do you like, you even like being on a boat, right? On a sailboat that's keeling over at 20 degrees. Is that, you know, does it bother me? Does it not? Right. Yeah. Go spend a day on the water and see what it's all about.
So you don't get seasickness on a cruise ship. What about this one?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on conditions.
Yeah. Now what's the furthest sail journey that you've done?
So you'll find with sailors that they're kind of divided into a few categories. So you have sailors who really just day sail, right? They go down to their local yacht club or their local marina and they take the boat out for a day and bring it back. And then you have kind of the category I'm in, which is a coastal cruiser, right? So I'll go multi days, rarely out of sight of land, right? Usually you're somewhere within, let's say 50 to 100 miles of land, and you're kind of hopping port to port. You may do, I've done passages that are 3 to 4 consecutive days in a row here in Mexico, down the coast, those kinds of things. Maybe you do charters, right? So you go to the Bahamas, you charter a boat for 7 days and just do the Bahamas.
After my one sailing trip, and the first day we were out, we got hit with the storm, and it was like, I think it was like 10 to 15 foot seas or something like that, which on a sailboat, I mean, and this was a boat full of crew members that had worked on ships. We were all freaking out on this little boat that was being tossed around like there was no tomorrow. I mean, it was so scary that everybody was like, just head to land. I don't care what, if it's the stop that we were going to make, head to land and let's get out of the storm. It was pretty scary. It's so like the thought for me to like going across like, you know, an ocean. Oh, hell no.
It was hard enough on a 74,000 ton ship for 10 days in the ocean. I mean, shit, you know, like on the Majesty, like we had 4 days of 50 foot swells. I mean, that was enough. But why we never got seasick, I think, was probably because there was no working and we were all completely drunk off of our face for 4 days.
It really is a totally different experience because, again, I hadn't really been through that. And I had been on ships like that. I've been through storms, cruise ships, and I never really felt scared or worried. But that first day on that sailboat, oh, man, it was like, we were all pretty freaked out.
The motion when the seas get up in a small, right, you know, 40 to 50 feet is a small boat, right? Even though by sailboat standards, they're good size. But the motion when the seas get up is shocking to a lot of people, right? Just how much that boat
couldn't moves. Imagine that what it would be like on a boat like yours.
Yeah.
No, I can't even imagine. I mean, being on a 40-foot vessel and being in my worst storm, which was in the mid, and we had 40-foot swell. And for the Song of Norway was a relatively small ship, but, you know, but it was big. It was way bigger than 40-foot, sailing boat. And it was rough. We were coming down, we were going up and over those swells and coming down so hard. I can't even imagine. It would be possible.
So John,
let him answer. Is it possible?
Totally possible. And in fact, a lot of part of the courses that we teach are really preparing sailors for that environment. This week I'm teaching class this week. That's why I'm out on the Sea of Cortez. And we've had some pretty strong winds this week and some pretty good seas, and that's excellent education, right? So for people to understand in a safe environment with someone that knows what they're doing, that this, you know, it's not that scary. This is perfectly normal. Yes, the boat is supposed to heel over. Yes, the water crashes over the bow and sprays back into the cockpit all over you. Nope. These are things that happen. And so that's part of the training process is really conditioning that this is normal. This is what sailing is like. And the whole idea is for the student to be able to walk away from the course either with confidence
or that, like, I'm never getting on a fucking boat in
the future, or that's the other option, right? Yeah, this isn't for me, right? I'm out.
And so once they're finished with these courses, I would assume in order to, because eventually if they want to have or go out on a sailboat, you know, by themselves or, you know, and take it out as basically the captain, they need to obtain a license, correct? They can't, you just go out on a sailboat on your own without having a license?
So oddly enough, it does not require a license, so to speak. It does require a merchant mariner credential, right? Which is what a captain's license is, which is issued by the U.S. Coast Guard, if you are going to have some kind of compensation. So if you're paying passengers or cargo, you have to have a credential to do that. But you do not require a credential to rent a sailboat, right? Charter a sailboat or buy a sailboat and take it out on the water. And now,
take some friends out.
States have some very basic boater card requirements, which most of them are literally kind of an online test. Where this really comes into play is insurance. So if you're going to buy a boat, quite often your insurance company isn't going to insure that sailboat unless you can prove that you've got some time on the water and some training. That's where it kind of comes around. The other place it comes around is if you're going to go charter a boat, same. The charter company is not going to charter that boat to you unless you can demonstrate that you've got some experience and some training, some kind of
training.
And
I'm sure the liability waiver is a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And and always get the whole damage protection, right? That's right.
we needed that on our trip. and we had two people with licenses, but one of them was his license. He had a captain's license, but he was used to big ships. Mm-hmm. So when we hit that storm and he was trying to look through a chart, he's like, I gotta go downstairs, staff captain, take the wheel. It was noticeably the difference between the one who was used to driving the sailboat and the way he hit the waves. And when the staff captain took it, who was used to a big ship, we were hitting the waves differently. And it was noticeably different. I was like, look at that chart quickly and get back up. This isn't going so well.
I wanted to ask about this. I mean, the weather is a factor, but do you ever get people on there that are clearly nuts or just problem children?
So that's probably the most interesting part of being a sailing instructor is, you know, every week you go out, you've got a new group of 3 to 6 people on the boat. And so personalities and dealing with people is a huge part of it. I mean, you're like stuck on a little boat with them for the next 7 days, right? That is definitely something you kind of have to be pretty good with people and so forth. So now, on the other hand, most of
what was the worst one? Yeah. We want to hear the worst one.
I'm assuming you don't have a galley or anything. or a jail on there, tie them to the mast or something.
Yeah, yeah. No brig. No, our liability waiver kind of lays it out pretty clearly that at any point in time, if you're disruptive or dangerous or whatever the case may be, you can be removed from the vessel. And we'll try to coordinate getting you back to the embarkation port. But as the skipper in charge of the boat and a licensed captain, if you're a threat to my vessel or crew, I can drop you on any beach anywhere. Never had to do that, but you know, we stated outright in the paperwork that.
Have you ever had to call one? It's just like, hey, we can't go on. We're heading back.
No, you know, I really haven't. I really have not had that situation. The vast majority of people that come on these trips are, first of all, that as you pointed out early on, these trips aren't cheap. So there's a pretty good investment financially to come do this. They're also on vacation in Mexico or on vacation in the Pacific Northwest. So people are in a pretty good mood, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm sure like the Kardashians are going to get pretty weird.
Well, you get some odd ducks, we'll call them sometimes.
So who cooks? Are you at sea the whole time or do you go in and out of ports?
So we go in and out of anchorages. I'll say we don't really go in and out of marinas much. So we're mostly anchored in anchorages. And one of the course requirements in one of the three courses does require galley use. So you know, we rotate the galley duties amongst the students and everybody has to kind of learn how to use all the systems on the boat
and
prepare a meal and, you know, all those kind of things.
And guys, you ready to go on a sailing instruction vacation?
I've been ready for a long time. I mean, I've been ready ever since I've stumbled on John. I've been ready. I'm like, dude, I want to do this.
But of course, I can't ever do that.
It sounds so cool. As long as we stay within 50 miles from the shore.
Brad, I can't even drink so much, Brad.
I can't even afford to get to Seattle, let alone take a course or anything. But
you have to limit your drinking, Brad.
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it.
But speaking of cost, I mean, just to kind of get into the cruise line stuff a little bit, is the reason you do the anchorage, does it cost more money? Like if you dock, is it like the cruise lines? Like is it the cost thing? Like if you're, if you tie up alongside, it costs a lot more than if you're anchored out.
Yeah, certainly. Anchoring out is basically no cost, and tying up in a marina somewhere is absolutely going to have a nightly cost. That's not necessarily the deciding factor. It's more tying up in a marina is pretty simple, pretty easy, pretty straightforward. Making sure students know how to anchor crowded anchorage, how to make sure that anchor doesn't drag if conditions change, things like that are really the skills we're trying to build.
Have you ever had a situation where you like got an anchor snagged or something and had to cut the line or?
So I've had a number of them. So one of the situations that I've had was we were at a location where we got a mooring ball, right? So these are permanently anchored moorings that you can come in and pick up. Washington State has a marine park system where you're able to do that. So we had picked up one of these mooring balls and spent the night. The next morning, right, we were going to pull the mooring line and get ready to take off. And I had this teenage kid, 16, 17 at the helm. And I was explaining to them, so they're going to pull the mooring lines. The wind's going to blow us backwards. There was a little bit of breeze coming in. And because when you're at the helm, you can't see the mooring ball. So I was just explaining, it's going to blow you back. You're going to see the ball. And then we're going to put the boat in forward under power and motor around and get on our way. They pull the mooring line. He puts it in forward. I'm looking around. We're still going backwards. Something's going on with the gear selector, the transmission, something, and we're not going forward. So there's a beach, the sand spit fairly close behind us. And so I holler at the guys up on the front of the boat to drop the anchor so we can figure out what's going on. And I see them up there fumbling around with a knot somebody tied in the chain. So, all right, so that's not going to happen. So we pop a sail out and the plan is we're going to sail up and around this other boat and try to get that by then, hopefully get the anchor down and figure it out. Well, long story short, we run aground, right? When we get out to the next of this other boat, we hit bottom. Falling tide, we hit the bottom. And so, you know, now we've got this boat stuck on the bottom with the tide going down. And so all hell broke loose at that point. So essentially we did everything in the book, right? Everything we teach on how to get ungrounded, we did it all at once. So we had this old guy was on the boat next to us. He came over. He's like, you know, I've got a long line. If you've got a long line, we can hook it up to this mooring ball to your bow and try to pull it over. So we hook these lines together and get it all hooked up. That's not working. It's not budging. So we take a halyard from the very top of the mast, a line, another rope, and we run it out to this same line we ran from the bow. And now we're using the winches on the boat to tilt, to heel the boat over, right? We're trying to tip it to get the keel off the bottom. And so then we're using the anchor, right? They drop the anchor into our tender, the small boat that we tow around, right, to go to shore and stuff. And so we're taking the anchor out to deep water and using the windlass on the bow. So we're now we've got three things we're doing. In the meantime, by the way, one of the students hit the gear shift and it went into forward, but now we can't get it out of forward. So now we've got forward, but we can't. We have no neutral. So there,
guys,
so
any guys getting a fail?
Yeah. So the sail is still up, right? We popped the sail up originally. So at the end of the, at the end of this whole debacle, and by the way, this is a popular campground. So there are lawn chairs are gathering on this beach behind us now. Yeah, right. We've become the spectacle of the anchorage.
How are these guys going to get out of this?
Yeah, exactly. And so the Augusta wind comes up and fills the sail, heels the boat over just a little bit. So now the boat just takes off, right? It's loose and it takes off, but it's still hooked to all these lines. And it's about to take up the slack and kind of circle around and come back towards these other boats that are on these moorings. So they finally killed the engine, right? Because they're stuck in forward. So they finally killed the engine and they pulled it all in. So we go down, once we get it all hooked back up to this mooring, we go down below and figure out that a cotter pin fell out of the throttle linkage and it basically just fell off the little arm that puts it in forward and reverse. So it was, you know, literally a 5-minute fix, but it created a 3-hour ordeal.
I just wanted to get in here. Have you ever taken a cruise on a cruise ship?
So I've been on a cruise ship twice.
Really?
When? So let's see. I did some part of the Caribbean, I think, maybe 6-7 years ago. And then actually just last year, we took some of our adult kids and did an Alaska cruise.
Oh, fun.
Nice. What ship?
Oh, goodness.
What cruise line?
It was. Too bad my wife's not sitting next to me. She would know that. I think it was Holland America, the Alaska cruise.
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense. Yep. Especially being out of Seattle. Yeah. The two big cruise lines up that do Alaska are Holland America and Princess.
Yeah.
They have the most
ships up there. Yep. It was Holland America. And then the Caribbean one was Carnival, I believe.
Well, while we're doing that, let me ask you a question. So in all of the classes you have, what's the weirdest, strangest, I don't know, good, bad, ugly, weird story that you have from like a student?
A weird story from a student.
Funny, good, sad, bad, you know, anybody fall overboard and you just leave them or, you know. But like, yeah, you know,
definitely not.
Yeah, Scott, I've only killed 3 students. Right. Not so bad a run.
Some that
we have like a 20% acceptable casualty rate or something. Right? No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. And most of the stories from students are I don't know, not weird necessarily. Like, you know, I did a class for 2 families, 4 adults, mom and dad, and a bunch of kids. And we did a class on a catamaran, and their whole thing was they're going to buy a giant catamaran and go sail around the world. They actually had gotten into contract on a 65-foot catamaran, and they got the survey where they did an inspection on the boat. They sent them the inspection report, and they realized, we don't know what any of this stuff is. We don't even know what they're talking about. Wait a minute. Maybe we should get some training or learn what we're doing here.
Oh, and, really?
So that's how I met them, right? They signed up for the course. They come out and they're on the catamaran. And we had a fantastic trip. They're great people. They completed all their courses. And in fact, that today they then bought another 65-foot catamaran And there are a total of 10 of them all together on it. And
oh, wow.
last I talked to them, they were leaving Panama headed towards the Caribbean.
How fun. There was a girl on when I was on the Monarch, Tracy Lemon, and we met her out of where's a Monarch go? I think we're in St. Martin, and she has, I think at the time she was 17 or 18, maybe 18 or 19, but she literally grew up on a trimaran, and that's all they did was sail around the world and work, and they lived solely 100% of the time on the catamaran. And she was like, yeah, come down and, you know, come down and look at our quarters. So she showed us her room and stuff. And she was like, yeah, I got one of the bigger rooms. And it was like, no.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a sleeping chamber.
It's a sleeping chamber. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you just slide into this thing that's got a bed. And then, I mean, it was cool, but you slide in and you look up and you could see the stars out here. And you had a shelf and a drawer. And that's her whole room.
Probably one of the only people that ever joined a cruise ship and was like, wow, this cabin is huge.
We ended up getting her a job on the cruise ship. So she came and she was crew staff, and she really enjoyed it. She was like, this is like a suite.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just curious, when you're out on the boat with, you know, when you're doing the training, when you're up on deck, is everybody tethered and with life jackets on or no?
So, you know, it depends on conditions. And it also depends on what country we're operating in. Okay. Much more concerned operating in the U.S. than we do in Mexico, for instance. But safety is always the paramount subject, right? So there's no hard fast rule that says you must wear a personal flotation device. However, as the skipper, I reserve the right to say you must wear a personal flotation device if conditions are such that I decide it's necessary.
There's a movie, Wild Things, with Matt Damon and Neve Campbell and Denise Richards and stuff. I don't know if you saw it a long time ago, but at the end of the movie, you know, they're on this big boat and there's a term. He's like, you remember, Jimmy, one hand for the boat, one hand for yourself. Is that like a real thing? Like, you know,
I say that all the time.
Yep. Okay.
I say it all the time. There's sailboats are moving, they're pitching, they're, you know, there's a lot to trip on and kick. So yeah, one hand for yourself, one hand for whatever you're working.
Okay. Well, cool. Where would be the worst and best port that you've been to?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask him where's the weirdest place he's ever done it on the boat.
Oof, I'm going to leave that one alone.
God, Brad.
Sailing into some place like Victoria, Canada, for instance, into the Inner Harbor in Victoria is absolutely magical. You know, the old buildings around the waterfront and the Empress Hotel and just that whole scene is spectacular.
It's beautiful up there, but it's always windy. When I've gone to Victoria, it's always been super windy out there. Isn't that generally the case for you?
Well, on a sailboat, that's what we're hoping for every day.
Oh, well, that's true.
Right? We want the wind. Yeah, we want that wind, right? That's what we're out here for.
It just seemed like it was a very windy port from my recollection.
So it... time of year plays a big role. It's certainly very windy in the winter time. In the summer, it can be a mixed bag. One of the reasons the San Juans and British Columbia are such popular cruising grounds is because they're of the consistent breezes. There's good sailing there.
Now I have based on Eric's question and what we're talking about currently. I have a question. What if you are out on a sailboat and you have no wind, or how much wind does it actually take for you to put the sails out and to move? Like, has there ever been just a no wind and you were just like, well, we got to sit here until we get wind?
Oh, well, it happens all the time. And, you know, it's almost like we're out in nature or something, right? Wind comes up and then it doesn't. You have an engine.
I know, but I mean, I have an engine.
So you can start it up and, you know, get where you need to go,
or create your own wind.
It could be great if we could figure out how to do that. So yeah, there are times though that you know, you're just sitting around drifting and waiting for the wind to come back up, and then eventually you get bored of that and you start the engine. So
the other part of my question, how much wind does it take for you to get any use out of
it? So it depends on the boat. You know, this week I'm out on a 44-foot monohull sailboat. This boat will sail pretty well in really anything over about 6, 7, 8 knots. That's not ideal. Ideal is 12 to 15 knots is ideal, but we can sail in 6.
Oh, I got one. Yeah. So I read this a while back and I can't remember it, but how do you calculate and where
we were
going
to end this podcast?
I'm sorry.
30 but, minutes ago.
How do you calculate a knot and where did the term knot come from? Because if I'm trying to remember when I Googled or searched this a long time ago, but it has something to do when they tied knots in a rope and let it out and something like that.
Exactly. So in the tall ship days, they would use a line with knots and an hourglass and determine how fast the ship was moving by how many knots passed through the handler by the time that hourglass drained. So a nautical mile is just slightly longer than a standard or statute mile.
Cool. Exciting. Yeah. I'll stop. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, as a last question, anything else you'd like to share with us or the audience about sailing?
Oh, you know, this has been a ball. I think the one thing I would share is that the reason people come and do this kind of thing is because the cruising life, getting on a sailboat and going into different places and different anchorages and different ports, there's really nothing like it than experiencing the world from the deck of a sailboat. And and it's an amazing thing, and I just have a blast sharing and helping people go live. We have people who want to sail around the world. We have people who just want to go do charter vacations. And either way, it's great to be able to help them make their dreams happen with Cruise and Learn Sailing.
Great. Excellent. So John, go ahead and tell people that have been listening and are ready to get out there and learn how to sail. How do they find you? What's your website? Where do they go?
Absolutely. cruiseandlearnsailing.com. And that's the word cruise, the letter N, learnsailing.com is the website. That's the best place to reach us. We have, as you mentioned, we have all kinds of information on the site there. You can reach out to us about any questions and cruiseandlearnsailing.com.
Awesome.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And you can watch some videos. You can watch some virtual reality stuff, which I watched earlier today. That's which was pretty fun. Yeah, that was pretty neat. So, well, thank you so much for coming and joining us from the Sea of Cortez. This is a great one. Thank you so much.
Yes. Yeah, my pleasure. John. Thanks so much, John.
It's great to meet you.
Likewise. Great to meet you guys. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. All right.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Hopefully we'll see you on a sailboat someday.
And what do you say to a sailor? May your seas be smooth and the wind be strong, something?
That's not too far off, right? May you have gentle breezes and following seas.
Thanks so much.
Sweet. Thanks. Ciao.
Thank you.
That was cool.
That was awesome.
Really interesting.
I did look up the term yar, and on the eastern seaboard of the United States, a boat is said to be yar when she is well balanced on the helm quickly and handedly.
All right.
I have to tell you, when we were on, I was telling you about that trip we were on, and we hit that storm the first day, we weren't tethered. We do not have life jackets on. And then eventually, I don't remember, I think it might have been Blaze, said tethered. You need to get tied to the ship. So we got the tethers out. And I remember asking Mary for a life jacket, and her eyes got really big, like huge. And she's like, "What do you need a life jacket for? What do you need?" She's like, she thought maybe somebody had fallen over. So I thought,
"Go to your muster station."
Precaution, Mary. Precaution.
Every sailboat movie that I'm thinking of is was coming up in this podcast, like Captain Wrong. You know, the swells will, or the squalls will come on fast, and they'll leave you fast. Captain Ron.
Well, the reason I know that is because I know a female lead in that from Puerto Rico or whatever, but she's like a Latina Sandra Bullock, Rosalind Sanchez. She was the host of Fantasy Island. You know, the reboot that was just out the last few years.
I hadn't even watched it.
Yeah. They did a reboot of Fantasy Island, and she's the Ricardo Montalban.
Deep plane.
It's interesting.
It had to be done.
I of course you were going to do that. Was there any doubt?
Hey everyone, the ship is about to set sail, which brings us to an end for today. We hope that you enjoy the podcast. For bonus audio, and if you would like to see this podcast in video, please visit our YouTube channel, My Ship Story. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram as My Ship Story. Don't forget to let us know if you're a past or present crew member, and if you have a story that you would like to tell, or if you like, you can email us your story for us to read on the air. Email us at myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. That's myshipstorypodcast@yahoo.com. Goodbye for now, and be sure to tune in next week, same time, as we'll have a new podcast every Monday. Bon voyage!